Well, welcome everybody to the Faith Tech Podcast. My name is James Kelly. I have the amazing honor to lead this global tech community for Christ we call Faith Tech. And today I have this conversation with Cutter Calloway, Dr. Cutter Calloway. What a name, eh? Wow, Cutter Calloway, born for Hollywood. So Cutter is a professor at Fuller Theological Seminary out of California. He's got more letters behind his name than anyone I've ever met. Multiple degrees, so a couple master's degrees, got a PhD in theology and culture, PhD in psychology. Fantastic mind. Love the way he tells stories. And we got into this great conversation around all sorts of stuff that I think you would find incredibly insightful, because Cutter comes, he's kind of one of the world leading thinker at the intersection of Hollywood and theology, and he's also ventured more and more into the space of technology. How is devices changing and shaping us? How is software and the way we're interacting with media changing and affecting us? He wrote a book a couple years ago called Techno Sapiens in a Networked Era, Becoming Digital Neighbors. So certainly recommend checking that out. I mean, we get into this conversation on long-form podcasting, the role of that right now in the world, and our insights. We even get into the art and value of speeches. I'm a big fan of speeches. I give maybe too many of them, but I love them. I love them, and so I got his opinion on that. I asked him about this phrase. A friend once told me, I feel more connected than ever and less connected than ever. And Cutter gave some good insights on that. And then lastly, in this episode, and we've broken this off into two episodes, just because there's so much there, we wanted to break it down into two parts, and they kind of clean pretty nicely. I asked him about this redemptive technology framework we've been thinking about, where you have exploitative tech, responsible tech, and redemptive tech. And again, Cutter had some great ideas on that. So hope you enjoy the conversation. And then this will be the first part of two parts. So let's jump right in. Here's my conversation with Dr. Cutter. Okay, I shouldn't have done that. Cutter Calloway. Here we go. Thanks for taking the time, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely. Always a pleasure to talk with you and about stuff that we love to talk about.
Oh, man. Well, I remember so well when we first started talking, but then recently we got a chance to really sit down together in L.A. together. And I just remember we're getting into this conversation, and a moment hit me when I'm literally going, dude, we should be recording this, because I know others... Like, we're just both so intrigued by this conversation, and I've had other people along the way of my journey with Faith Tech go, oh, man, you should have recorded that conversation when I'm telling stories. And every time you and I talk, Cutter, it's one of those, like, we should have recorded that. And at least, if nothing else, I get to go back and I get to re-listen to some of that thinking. And so... yeah, just for us to take this time now and dive into what we're passionate about. I mean, I'm excited to talk through things like, where is this intersection of media and technology and culture fused together? And, you know, I think of these words of like media ecology. Where did that come from, and what's going on? And I know you and I have had these side conversations around like, well, let's talk about movies and the implications of those movies on us, but then even the technology that sits behind that and things like Netflix and how that's changed things. And so I really think, and then lastly, I think of this conversation on faith and work and how that connection into technology. We've done some work together on that as Faith Tech, and you with Adam Graber as well. And so I just thought, man, let's have a conversation around those. So right off the bat, I reached out. I said, hey, Cutter, you want to actually do that thing of recording our conversation? And you said, let's do it 100%. Like, what what was even that yes trigger where you said, this is a space that I love, that's important to me?
Yeah. Well, probably a confluence of a few things. One, just the format. I am a lover of Gérard Lanier, who is sort of the father of... virtual reality and web 2.0 in some ways. Maybe some of the people listening would know him. And he wrote a book. I read a number of his things, but he wrote a pretty much a a screed against basically social media and more the algorithm and the economic model that we currently inhabit. But in that, he's saying, you know, I'm not a Luddite. I'm not an anti-tech person. Obviously, his whole career, his whole life has been devoted to that. Yeah. And he said, but one thing that I appreciate, this is Jaron talking, are things like podcasts. In part because they are conversational, dialogical, they're really, really hard to chop up and take a little bit out of context and have it spread in incoherent ways that it becomes something it was never designed to be, right? And I've thought for a while about that I think that's very true. This is why sort of more long form podcasts are leveraging the best of technology. And in some cases, I mean, they're not perfect, but they're avoiding some of the things that bring out our lower selves, if you will, our less ideal selves. And some of the, well, we can get to that in a minute, but in the rest of the media ecology that we inhabit. So that's one thing, just podcasts I'm all in for. The other side of it is, as you know, full well, there's just no realm of life, whether you're working in technology or not, that technology and media doesn't impact. And for us as Christians, I think it's increasingly urgent for us to be reflective, thoughtful, both practitioners, creators, users of technology and media. And that just cuts across basically every domain, whether you're working in quote unquote tech, or you're more a consumer of it. It's just something that I find is close to my heart. And, you know, I work at a seminary, so we train generally, the seminary is thought to be training people that would go into the pastorate, right? Or in churches, or maybe even parachurch ministry. But increasingly, our student base, actually, historically, that's never been a majority. And now it's very clear that a majority is going into some other realm besides pastoral ministry. So it is people that are going into technology, people going into business, people going into the entertainment industry. And so a big part of just our mission here at the seminary is to say, how do we equip people for an ever-changing world, knowing that their landing place is probably going to be one of these places in business, not necessarily in church. So for all those reasons, I said enthusiastically, absolutely, let's chat. And of course, you're Canadian, and so I know you're a gentle and hospitable podcast interviewer.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I'll send you the $1 million check a little bit later, you know, after this, for sure.
But
I didn't mean to bring that, But going back to the podcast conversation, I think that's actually a really fantastic example of a lot of the stuff we've been talking about. I was just watching recently a news show, and like a traditional news show, which I don't watch regularly anymore. And I just remember they were interviewing people, and they would take literally 3 seconds of someone saying like one sentence from an entire interview as part of this news update. And I'm going, there's no way you could capture what that person was really trying to convey to me in 3 seconds to 5 seconds. And I instantly felt like almost deceived, as if like I didn't get everything that was there. And so, yeah, this medium of podcasts and the rise of podcasting, which has had its ebbs and flows, but I think it's certainly at a stage where it's well enjoyed and taken in, is because you cut across that deception and that you know, perceived lying or true lying, and you just open up the floodgates to people speaking. And you know what's fascinating to that is I'm a big proponent of speeches. I think it's one element that we've lost in our current media and use of technology, is the art, impact, and power of a speech. And I think podcasts is like, okay, Cutter, what do you think on this? Go, you know, and now you just get space, and I'm not going to interrupt you. And I love that medium.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've thought about speeches too, because I, you know, and technologists would, I think, appreciate this. There's a consumer mindset to a lot of the stuff we do. And the reason that the news or whoever chops up stuff so quickly is one, as you're saying, they're crafting this very particular story that it is deceit, but not always in the negative sense, right? It is inherently a constructed view of this story, a take. Okay, that's fine. That happens. But as you're saying, at a certain point, it strikes me and others as manipulative or counter to what the actual conversation was. The reason that speeches, I think, are less, you know, consumed or used or given is because simply people assume no one has the, you know, we ain't got no time for that. right. There ain't nobody right. got no time for that. And so you've got to get in and get out really quick. Otherwise, people change the channel back in the old days or, right. you know, click to a new something or go to another tweet or whatever it is. And that is so, again, back to the economics of it, that is so driven by economic factors in terms of how we advertise and fund these different projects. Mm. And then it amplifies and animates at the end user those same habits, those same habits of thought, those same habits of use. So I'm with you. I think these sort of longer form things allow us to kind of unpack our thoughts in ways that are more cohesive, coherent, natural. But the speech thing is interesting because at Fuller anyway, I'll say, you know, the worst kind of education is basically a one-way lecture. Right. And then there's been some others that stop and go, well, wait a minute. Maybe it's bad lectures. Maybe it's not lectures or speeches per se, but it's, yeah, right. That there was a time where if you were, say, an educator or a politician or someone that had some authority, people said the only way of communication was you get up there and you tell us all the information you've got, right? Like you own the information. Now you communicate that to us. And it's a one-way sort of stream. Well, now the information is at our fingertips. Any of us can get that same content. What we need, I think, is wisdom, right? So now the person on the stage, the person in the podcast booth, supposedly has grappled with this content, has thought about it, has had their own thinking sort of pressed and refined by other experts in the field. And now when the speech comes to bear, the hope would be you're not there simply to give us the information we can't access, but you're helping us discern what's important, what's not, what to trust, what not, how to interpret it rightly. And that is a skill set I think that, you know, the best speech givers are great at, and you can just listen to all day long. And yet, Ed, to your point, we see fewer and fewer of those. If you go read the Gettysburg Address, like, can you imagine that being given anywhere now? Like, I can't imagine, and it's beautiful, right? Like, it's just beautiful as a speech. So I'm with you. The podcast side, though, I find this in online education, and it sort of was an aha moment for me that I should have seen coming, but it's one of those, like, oh, how did I not know? And I actually started my podcast journey, if you will, because I was teaching a lot online and I was interested in, similar to what you're saying, like having more conversations with experts in the field and whatnot. And so it was content for my online courses. Well, what I found was that not only did the students engage with that better than just listening to Professor Calloway talk, because they were invited into a conversation. But then also now they pop it in their earbuds and walk out, or they go in their car or whatever. And now they have a community of people that are carpooling, let's say, to work. And now they have an educational community along the ride. And I was like, oh, wow, this is fascinating. So the podcast format, I think, is good, not only because it's conversational, it allows people to have a fully fleshed out thought. But then because it's a dialogue, it invites people in. In a way that you don't have to be the primary listener, and now you join in that community. So that may be a little highfalutin for the podcast. It's still just, you know, people talking. But those are some of my thoughts of agreement there with you.
Yeah, and I wonder too, like, I'd love to riff a little bit on your insights and thoughts on the economics that sit behind some of this. And I think, like, you know, it's really interesting because I had a friend recently say, I feel more connected than ever and less connected than ever at the exact same time. And I was like, well, let's dissect that, because that's actually a pretty profound statement that you just made. And on one hand, he's saying, I feel more connected than ever because he's got more people that he can connect with, right? Whether it's through social media or whatever technology means he was interacting with, I got more connections. But then he says, I feel less connected because the depth to which I know those people, and even the smaller few people, is less. You know, like it used to be that we averaged 3 close friends. It's now 2 close friends, and continuously dropping in terms of depth of relationship. And so, you know, what sits behind a lot of that, like you mentioned, Cutter, is the economics of how the platform works. I'm interested to know, you know, your thoughts on some of that dialogue.
Oh, yeah. You know, you could go a few different routes here. You know, my first terminal degree was in theology and cultural studies. Mm. My second was in psychological science. And so you could go the psychology route on this. And what I find fascinating about this is how modern technology leverages a lot of sort of core psychological tendencies for good and for ill. And this is one of those places. I mean, we have, you know, especially young adults are exactly that, more connected than ever, and yet are demonstrating higher degrees of depression and anxiety than ever before. You have, if you go even lower than young adults in age and go adolescents and early teenagers, they're having less sex, doing less drugs. I don't know what the word there is. drinking less alcohol than ever. And yet they also are having more of these mental health problems. And so it's a real issue. Sherry Turkle, I don't know if you know this name, she wrote a book called Alone Together. Yeah. And this is her. Now, I go back and forth. I'm of a few minds. I have dissociative identity disorder. And I don't want it to come off as like a pure, oh, everything's terrible and this is awful and let's, you know, get off of our technological devices.
Our community as Faith Tech are working at Facebook, are working at, you know, at Twitter, and are leading and building and creating these technologies. Yeah. And so this is very real for them because they're the ones building it. And so this is why it's also extremely important as builders to be thinking about this very deeply.
Well, I think is one of the challenges and difficulties. Now, I don't work at a Facebook, but I work at an institution where we all go, okay, here's my task, right? Here's the job I've been given. And I can be faithful within that realm. And there's always this conversation of going, okay, well, is what I'm designing and building being then used at this higher level order in ways that are out of my control? And in some cases, in ways that I don't actually approve of, right? Like, I wouldn't want that happening. And that I have a lot of empathy for that position. For this reason in particular, you could design, you know, again, I'm now about to demonstrate my ignorance of what a Facebook employee does. but you could design the greatest sort of data scraping algorithm that it introduces people to each other that maybe they would never have been able to come into contact. And it's, you know, pure and holy, and the good Lord just loves it and approves of it all. And then that is then raised up to a higher level, and you have an unnamed CEO or owner who then uses that good technology to a nefarious end, or to an end that's purely economically driven, or you know, something like that. That I think would be a real challenge. Now, I also think it's something that we should all think about. I'll use my example of one of my brothers, because I've talked to him about it and he'd be fine. Now, he is a person of Christian faith. He works actually in gaming. He's now an art director for a company, but he's worked for Sony and others where he is a character artist and other things. And they were doing an IPO, and it was a mobile game. And he was telling me it's one of these in-app purchase type games.
Right.
And And the model of most of those games is driven by leveraging addictive tendencies. So part of the reason that some of these mobile games, when they ping you and, you know, all these updates, and then just actually the in-game the interactivity, all leverages these kind of like, I have obsessive addictive tendencies. And he said, we really want to get into the Chinese market in particular, because it's so vast. We just get a small little bit of their, of that market share, and we're golden, right?
Right.
And I stopped and I go, okay, tell me a bit more about the game. And he told me, I'm like, okay. And then tell me how you, you know, make purchases, how you, you know. And then I was like, you do know that in particular right now, I just read a thing that, that young Chinese men and women, it's not just men, but have a real profound problem with internet addiction right now. And they're like, it's a pandemic almost in China. What you're telling me is you're the success of your technology depends upon these people who are struggling with addiction being addicted to your game. And it was interesting because he stopped and he goes, oh, I've never thought of that. And I was like, really? It sounds like you just told me that was the strategy. And I was like, fine, if you're not a Christian, I could see how fine, you know, I don't know what's the guardrails there, but I was like, as a person who says I follow Jesus, it seems like, my dear brother, you might think about that. And you might ask your bosses and others of like, well, what do we do ethically here? Again, very challenging. At that point, he was at a smaller kind of startup, and he was able to go and have that conversation with higher ups, et cetera. But at a large organization, a Facebook or others, I can imagine that's a really difficult path to navigate. That being said, I think you can be a sort of a credible witness, an impactful person of faith in any domain, and you can't always say to yourself, you know, because you could be paralyzed in any place, like Jesus has called you to a faithfulness where you're at, and it can't be that you do nothing simply because your work might be used at cross purposes to the gospel. So I think it's always something that needs to be held in mind. We all need to be self-critical. At the same time, that doesn't mean that, you know, if you're a tech person, you need to like abandon ship or anything, because God's given you gifts and skills for good, and that's the question I think you need to ask.
Yeah, and
I got off topic there, so great feel off free to topic. Ask me if I need to go back to,
Just keep going off the topic, because that is what the topic is for us, is a series of off topics. It sounds fantastic. I think for me, that whole dialogue is really intriguing in that. I learned this framework from friends of ours at Praxis Labs. They're based out of New York. They do this whole thing, redemptive entrepreneurship. And the framework they've been teaching and we've been trying to learn and apply to our space and technology is this, you know, you have exploitative technology, responsible technology. They use the word ethical. I use more responsible because that's the big word in tech, responsible tech. And then you have redemptive technology. And if you kind of break them down to these simple three categories, which are not simple at all, further you go into all three categories, I think it's trying to figure out, especially if you're working in tech, you got to be thinking, am I contributing that to something that is fundamentally exploitative? And if so, am I leading people towards a darker path away from Jesus Christ? And do I feel my work is fundamentally attributing to people going further away from Jesus Christ? And I mean, again, that's so difficult because there's things we're doing every day in the way we buy products and the way we're, you know, taking in certain food. And you could go into all sorts of conversations that are contributing to that. Yeah. So I think it's at least thinking like, is there something I should be doing right now? I like that point you said about your, was it your brother or brother-in-law that said, I'm going to at least talk to somebody, about this within my organization to speak to what I'm struggling with. But how do we even look at technology and view technology through a lens as believers is one of the questions I'm trying to really wrestle through.
Yeah, I like those three categories a lot. And in part, and this is where I'm always hesitant to give people advice.
Go for it, Cutter.
I'm listening to, I'm doing this, speaking of technology, I joined a thing for, what is it? It's like a social activity app that is for exercise. So like, they're themed. And so I can join with a team and I'm doing the Lord of the Rings journey right now. And so it's basically the nice. Amount of miles. So I just got out of the Shire. That was a 156 mile journey.
Okay.
And so if I cycle each day, you got a long way to go.
Yeah.
So the next stage is 850 miles. Wow. And so, but I cycle so I can, you know, get some good mileage in there. But I'm listening to the books on tape as I cycle through all these miles just for fun. And early on, Frodo's talking to the elf whose name I can't remember at first, the first elves they meet. And he talks about advice and he's like, it's really even from the wise to the wise, I hesitate to give advice. And I think there's some wisdom in that. Right. So it's always, and they said, don't go to elves because they'll always tell you yes and no. So that's what I'm about to say is yes and no. So I like your sort of three categories. And I definitely like that question of, are you contributing to something that's fundamentally exploitative? I think you really have to ask that. And there are sometimes for all sorts of reasons that the answer becomes yes. And I think it's back to that economic question is one of the biggest things in my mind, which is, if your organization at the end of the day, doesn't mean it, you have to work for a nonprofit, but if the primary resource engine relies upon exploiting your technology to economic ends, especially when the other data that you've got suggests that your technology is not good for the consumer, isn't leading them to flourishing or thriving, then I go, I got in this argument's a strong word, with my wife, because we were talking about the targeted ads and different things, and Instagram tells me I need all sorts of things. Now, I actually hate malls. I hate going to malls. I get mall sickness. I mean, I just, historically, this is my problem. She does not. She likes to shop, and she actually likes to, she returns a lot of stuff. So she just likes the thing of going in, trying things on,
the experience.
Getting something, and then maybe, the experience, right? I hate it. So I love that there is some AI out there that knows me so well that it anticipates, like, Cutter needs a new pair of shorts. Why don't you buy these? I'm like, done. Yeah. I'm getting them, right? You know? So I was looking the other day and I'm like, I have a pair of shoes, a pair of pants, and I think I had a shirt or something that all were suggested to me by Instagram. And my wife said, you know, she was very judgmental. And she's like, I've never bought something because someone told me to. And I'm like, that is a bunch of BS. And I was like, you have been marketed to your entire life. And I was like, it's just a different medium and it's a different technology. But the ads that you've gotten, you've been shaped as a consumer very decidedly. The difference is we have data points now that directly connect the ad that you see to the action, right? Yeah. Now Cutter goes from this Instagram ad to purchasing online. So there is a difference there, but please let's not pretend like advertising is the evil here. However, if you or anybody else is the a fan of Mad Men, I would suggest that go back to the 1950s, an organization that is using the rhetoric and the means of advertising to steer people towards something that they know is literally going to kill them.
Wow.
Now we're talking about something you might want to say, well, maybe it's not advertising I need to get out of, but maybe this ad agency,
right,
whose primary clientele is the cigarette industry or the tobacco industry, now maybe I'm manipulating in a way that's leading to destruction as opposed to something that I could say, yeah, I'm going to leverage advertising. There's nothing wrong with telling people about a great product, especially if that product leads them to health and flourishing. Yeah. In the world that I normally traffic in, that's not technology, it's the arts, right? The LGN arts. And a woman named Cecilia Gonzalez-Andrew, she writes a lot about She's a Latina theologian, and this question of beauty often comes up, and I think it applies to technology, and that she would say the opposite of beauty isn't ugliness. And we think in terms of Christians, you know, one of the most beautiful acts in all of human history was profoundly ugly in the cross. Like, this is a horrific, ugly thing. And yet the cross points us back towards the source of all beauty, right? So she says the opposite of beauty is not ugliness, it's glamour. And glamour, in her rendering, is this totally, like, inward-facing. It spins toward the self and not out towards the good or the beautiful. And I think another way of thinking about exploitation is your technology pointing people at the end of the technology, right? Is it pointing and directing people ultimately towards the good, the true, and the beautiful, that is, to God? Or is it a sort of self-interested enterprise that it's always turning back on itself, maybe even trapping people in its own technological apparatus such that they can't get outside of themselves? And I think that connects back to that loneliness. Like, I feel more connected, but I'm so alone. I'm imprisoned by my own self in that
sense. And I think the idea there is to, if whatever this, whatever complex organization, and I think that's the reality, is you do have some very clear exploitative organizations. A lot of organizations now live in this, I touch all three of those realms, you know? And so to me, though, is if all of the believers that love Jesus go, I'm out, I'm tapping, I'm leaving, I'm going, please don't all go, because we need Jesus to be in that space and prayed over and walking the halls and in those meetings and bringing a gospel lens to a design thinking session. And so this is where I love a friend of mine, Paul Burns, leads Twitter for Canada. And this man is deeply in love with Jesus, and he leads in a way that is putting his faith on display in a really beautiful, profound way. And, you know, where God has him right now is like, I'm a missionary here. This is my, I am called to live amongst this people group, live out the gospel and it's all of its complexities and all of its elements of sin and disruption and darkness that sits amongst this place that I'm in. I am called to live out the gospel here. And I think for my friends, when we get into these conversations, well, should I keep working at this company or not? This startup that's demanding, so exploiting my time, or should I be working here? I think at an individual level with community, talk it out with community, because we always get into this, well, if I make the decision, you know, that individualism that we've been so accustomed to believing is good for us, which is not. Yourself and a few core people you love and trust, say, am I called to this place as a missionary to live out the gospel? Am I in a place with Jesus that I can flourish and bring out Jesus here? Or is it so much taking me away from Jesus even personally and taking me down a path that's so dark that maybe that's that line too of, okay, perhaps you need to rethink that too.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And if you hear, or anyone else does in my, you know, stammerings, that the answer is either you leave or you stay, that's actually not what I'm getting at. It is exactly what you're getting at. And as we reflect on those three categories, exploitation, redemption, what was the third one?
Exploitation, responsible tech, and redemptive tech.
Responsible. Yeah, that's right. So as you think through, those are just helpful categories to ask yourself, and again, maybe at some point you do have to leave, like that could be it. But exactly your point, it's what now is my responsibility as the technologist here to my end user, to my colleagues, and to myself, right? Like you said, if it's unhealthy, I don't care if your technology is something else. If your job is destroying you, you need to try to think, you know, something differently. If it's destroying in your interaction with your colleagues is destroy, you know, okay, or the end user. And each of those, you could think through, how do I operate differently? Another psych thing is systems theory when it comes to organizations or whatnot. And usually we like to just blame one thing for the problem of an organization or whatever. And it's almost never that. It's the various systems that are in play that create and enable people to act in ways that are flourishing or destructive. And so it's much more difficult and complicated to do what you're saying, which is, how do I work together within the system, my system of community, the system that's created now with this organization, and then as we go out to our end users, and then think through, how do I shift it in some ways, steer it with my agency to say, I want to make this a little less exploitative, or not at all, right? And work against those tendencies within that technology and steer it, I think. To me, that, and then to your point, there may be even sometimes where you just go, you know what, this is an exploitative industry, but some person of faith needs to be with these people. And just that alone is a calling that we all need to think through. I mean, every bar should have Christians in it, but if a Christian is an alcoholic and struggles with that, that Christian probably shouldn't do ministry in a bar, right? I mean, so, you know, that I'm connected with some folks that, and this is actually very challenging, and it's, the ministry's gone up and down, but working with folks in pornography, the porn creation industry, and going, we're a missionary here, and you have to be very cautious. You have to be, have a really strong community to, you know, but man, where should Jesus be? Right there. And I think an argument can be made. I'm not sure if that will ever be in a non-exploitative industry, right? So that's an extreme example, of course. One of my friends is a TV writer. His name's Dean Batali, and he wrote for quite a years, was the lead writer for That 70s Show.
Nice.
And he's a Christian, and, you know, and people all often ask him, like, how as a Christian could you write for That 70s Show? You know, there's all sorts of, like, drug use and cursing, and, you know, it got, I think, rated, like, the most crass or something TV show year after year. And he said, yeah, it was. And he said, but if I wasn't there, it would have been way worse. And he said, that was a win. For me, as a Christian, being there in that writer's room, that was a win. That if I hadn't have been there, who knows what could have happened. And I was like, that is a very missional stance, and a very sober-minded approach to what is my active role in this industry that may be exploitative, and yet I'm acting as a redemptive presence in the midst of it.
Well, there we go, Dr. Cutter Calloway. Thank you, Cutter. Appreciate that conversation, my friend. And if you're thinking, are more people talking about this kind of stuff? Because I've been thinking about it, or maybe you're brand new to this kind of thinking. There are communities of people in cities and online around the world talking about this. You can go on faithtech.com. You'll see that there's communities of people meeting on a monthly basis in cities, in person. We also have FaithTech Online that meets monthly, where we're bringing in speakers like Cutter and others that are thinking deeply. And then we say, let's also put our skills and talents and minds to work to build and create technology for the glory of God. And then lastly, guys, before we wrap up here, if this was at all useful for you, we're a brand new podcast. It would be so awesome if you could write a review, not just because, man, let's get a review for the sake of a review. It's really not about that. I think one, it can encourage others and encourage our team. But secondly, is it helps others find these conversations. And our whole ministry is grounded on wanting to advance this vision and idea of redemptive technology around the world. And so if you can share that with a friend or write a review, that's going to go a long way. Appreciate you guys. Talk to you later.